we power the growth of over 1 million merchants of all sizes. In-store, in-app, online, on the go, or through vending machines, across 5 different continents. We operate payment transactions for over 350 banks, financial, and public institutions. We provide over 150 payment methods. Every year, we process 11.5 billion issuing transactions and 12.1 billion acquiring transactions. We are the European leader in payments and secured transactions technology. We are the world's number 4 in payment services. We help businesses of all sizes and industries to accelerate their growth journey quickly, simply, and securely. We are diverse. We are growing fast. With a clear vision, enabling economic and sustainable growth, and reinforcing trust and security in our societies. Committed to the highest quality. And to a better environment. With a clear strategy to combine European and global scale, best-in-class payment technology with unmatched local reach and expertise, and pushing the boundaries of payment and commerce innovation of tomorrow, today. We are Worldline. Find out more in our 2022 Universal Reference Document, including our integrated report. Payments to grow your world.
Mesdames, Messieurs,
ladies and gentlemen, dear shareholders, good afternoon. On behalf of the board, I'd like to welcome you to the 2023 Annual General Assembly of Worldline. Just as last year, this assembly will be directly retransmitted live on the internet in French and in English. After the presentations from the management and the statutory auditors, we will have a Q&A session. For those who are following this meeting remotely, you will have the opportunity to ask questions via the internet through the online transmission interface, and we will answer them during this session. Now, to open this meeting, I have Gilles Grapinet, who is the Director General, Marc-Henri Desportes, who is the Joint Director General, Gregory Lamberti, the CEO, Charles-Henri de Taffin, Secretary General, and he's also the Secretary of the Board. I'd like to also thank our board members for their presence, and I declare this general meeting open. So first of all, we are going to set up the committee that I chair. Besides me, we have the scrutineers of this meeting, Julia Fitzpatrick, who represents SIX, and Thierry Sommelet, who represents BPI. I'd like to thank you for being here today and for attending this meeting. Charles-Henri de Taffin, the Secretary General and Secretary of the Board of Worldline, will also be the Secretary of this meeting. So the committee is constituted. We have Deloitte and Grant Thornton that are represented, the statutory auditors. And I'd like to thank in this respect Madam Virginie Paltorp, who represents the auditors committee and who will read the statutory auditors report during our meeting. I'm going to immediately give the floor to the secretary, who is going to tell us about the documents, the agenda, and on the quorum. Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, dear shareholders, I'd like to remind you that this is a combined annual general meeting convened by the board, and this was decided on the 25th of April, 2023. The agenda, as well as the text of resolutions, were published in the meeting which appeared in the Bulletin des Annonces Légales of the 20th of April 2023, amended on the 3rd of May 2023. And the meeting was convened and published on the 19th of May 2023 in the BALO. According to the applicable legislations, the documents that have to be communicated to the General Assembly were published on the internet site of the company during the 21 days preceding this meeting. And for the others, they were put at the disposal of the shareholders during the 2 weeks preceding the meeting. I therefore suggest, in the interest of the debates, to waive the authors from the reading of their reports. As for the URG, I'd like to remind you that it is accessible on the internet site of the company under the investor section. You can also obtain a copy if you request one from the company. As for the quorum, the total number of shares to be taken into account to calculate the quorum is 281,470,929 shares that have the right to be voted upon. This Assembly General has met after a first convening, and it requires a minimum quorum of 20% of the shareholders with a minimum voting right and a minimum quorum of 1/4 of the shares. After taking into account the attendance sheet and the votes and the proxies transmitted before the General Assembly, the quorum is at 89.99%, and at the same rate, 80% for the ordinary and extraordinary assemblies. This quorum was set on the day before of the General Assembly at 3 p.m. So since we have the required quorum as per law, it is constituted and can sit as a combined general meeting. Before going on to the voting of the resolutions, I will give you the definitive quorum. As for the agenda today, there are 33 resolutions that will have to be submitted to your approval today. You have read these resolutions in the meeting, in the notice of the meeting, published on the 20th of April and 3rd of May and 19th of May, and in the notice of meeting. The company has not received any points to be added to the points of the resolution according to law, whether it's from the shareholders or from the Social and Economic Committee. This assembly has been convened to deliberate on the agenda that you can see here now on the screen. The approval of the annual accounts and the results, the income, the report on the related party agreements, the renewal of the terms of six directors, the renewal of the terms of the compensation elements 2022, the renewal of the program for share purchase buyback, the financial delegations, and a statutory modification concerning the age limit of the CEO of the board. Thank you, Mr. Charles Henry. I'm going to describe the program of the General Assembly. First of all, Gilles Grapinet, our General Director, will present the roadmap of the group and its ambition for 2024. He will then present the results of 2022, as well as the broad lines of the strategic partnership with Crédit Agricole. And this was announced during the first quarter of 2023. Marc-Henri Desportes, who is our joint general director, will present the operational activity as well as the main commercial developments of the year. Grégory Lamberti, our financial manager, will continue with the presentation of the results for 2022, the highlights of the first quarter of 2023, and the objectives for 2023. Gilles Grapinet, our director general, will come back to present the stock exchange trends in terms of payments and the actions underway. And before concluding, he will present the group's environmental strategy. I will then present the report on the governance of your corporation that I've prepared with Georges Pauget, who is here with us, who is our lead director, and this was also prepared with the appointments committee. Mrs. Danielle Lagarde, in the absence of Mr. Luc Raymond, president of the Compensation Committee will present the report on compensations. Some of the resolutions submitted to your vote this year will be explained in the framework of these reports. Mrs. Virginie Paltorp from the Grant Thornton firm will then present the reports of the statutory auditors on behalf of the college before our Q&A session. Then shareholders will be able to ask oral questions during the session, and we will answer the questions transmitted via the retransmission interface of our meeting. And we will end our Assembly General Meeting with the voting of the resolutions that have been proposed to you and the announcement of the results. I'm going to immediately give the floor to our Director General, Gilles Grapinet. Thank you, Mr. President. Ladies and gentlemen, dear shareholders, I'm very happy to see you again this year and to speak in front of you as well as some of the key members of my management team to tell you about the execution of our 2022 year, which was a year, as you can see, that was very successful from many points of view. I will then let them present all the details. Marc-Henri will talk about the operational aspects. Gregory will talk about the financial details. Then I'll come back and talk about the general environment, talk about the price list, talk about payments, before talking about our environmental strategy, which is extremely important for our company because it's been more than 10 years that we have committed to optimize our strategy. Now, before entering into our 2022 results, I thought I should tell you about the vision of the company that the management team has had for the past 10 years. Since its IPO in 2014, Worldline has had a vision that was and that remains to build in Europe a world-class player in the field of digital payments. Those who have been following us since this IPO in 2014, you probably remember that at that time, no European player was present among the top 20 of the world in the payments industry. Europe was suffering from the long-term consequences of its monetary fragmentation. Payments, after all, I mean, it's the industries and services that circulate money. And Europe could not go on to this scale before having a single currency, the euro, and the regulatory framework, harmonization, and technology to have these type of payments in Europe to support the single market, which was the project of the Europeans since then. And we had this vision, and we had four convictions that all were true in the past 10 years. The first conviction was that euro was a founding action for the payments industry, and the banks that held the payment instruments, especially at the national level, could not alone deal with all the payment activities in Europe because banks are fundamentally in Europe domestic players, and they would need a partner or several partners to succeed and become leaders in Europe. And our second conviction is that Worldline had a lot of assets to become one of these partners. And of course, our identity, our European roots, our proximity with a certain number of these banks that we've been serving for quite a number of time in those countries, our technological know-how, in terms of acquisition, integration, this is decisive for a project that was going to be based on consolidation, and all that within the framework of a position that we claim to be besides banks to carry out all the transactions with them at the scale that was going to be taken with the single currency. And our conviction was that this industry was going to become more and more technological. It's an industry of the financial world with a lot of regulated activities, with a lot of financial regulations, but these are not very differentiating. Everybody applies the same rules. These are regulated activities. And what's different is the technology and the scale, the industrial scale. And that was our conviction. And that's what we contributed to payments in Europe. and the scale technology. And our fourth conviction is that a project of this nature was going to create a lot of value for our clients, for all our stakeholders, for our shareholders, through the acceleration of growth and through the increase of profitability in companies that would reach scale economies, that would have more synergies, and that would have further commercial successes thanks to its assets. And I think that we have successfully executed this vision throughout the years. And 2022 is part of this framework. And as you can see, we've multiplied the revenue of the group by 4 over 8 years. We've accelerated the internal growth of the company, organic growth, which is around 9 to 11%, whereas it was 3% when we began our IPO in 2014. We've multiplied the OMDA by 6. It is more than 1 billion euros. The free cash flow is at 5, and we have transformed the company by making the merchant services division, which is the most buoyant segment, which is really growing, it has reached 70% of our revenue. And it plays a key role in the acceleration of growth. And finally, your company has multiplied by 15 the number of merchants that it serves today throughout Europe. And all this was done within the framework of a strategy to accelerate organic growth and to enrich our offers, but also thanks to the acquisitions that played a key role and that were all very well integrated in the company. Now, talking about our 2024 ambition, and 2022 is the first year of this plan, you have to remember that at the heart of this 2022-2024 ambition, you have all the integration work that we're doing after the acquisition of Ingenico at the end of 2020. And this is a 4-year program to fully integrate it in our operations and draw all the synergies. So the 2022-2024 plan, it was presented at the end of 2021. It is based on 4 pillars and a permanent engagement to make this company real world-class company in the societal and environmental sector. But the first pillar is to accelerate the organic growth of the group by enriching the offers, by drawing all the synergies with this merger with Ingenico, and drawing benefits from all the transformations. There are demands from banks and merchants, and there's the evolution of the competitive environment too. The second point is to extract the synergies from this major merger to accelerate the profitability gains of the company and draw advantage from the acceleration of our growth. And our business is sensitive to scale effects, and there are certain operational levers, the conversion of the revenue into marginal profitability, which is important when we achieve such integrations. A third lever, as Worldline has become this player with more than 1 million merchants connected to all its platforms, how can we make the best of the wealth of our customer portfolio to sell our payment services? We did software. There are payment brands that want to launch themselves in Europe. This is a wonderful entry point in Europe in retail trade or wholesale trade by using Worldline as a distribution vector. So, to monetize all the assets that we are setting up year after year. This is very important, and we'll go back to this in our presentation. And priority number 4 is the consolidation in Europe, which has reached midway. 50% of the payment activities in Europe are still controlled by European domestic banks, the leading actors that we are, we and certain partners. We hold 40% of this market. So we are very far from having reached the saturation level in terms of consolidation. And as we progress, we see that banks are coming to us. The announcement that we've made with Crédit Agricole, this is a very good illustration of this. The fact that banks feel the need to ally themselves, to partner with industrialists who will provide the benefits of technology. So we're building this 2022-2024 plan, and our ambition is to make of Worldline a sustainable company with a growth model that will be perfectly sustainable. This includes all the usual dimensions, recital, etc., which is called Trust 2025. And the 2024 ambitions, as announced in 2021, are to accelerate the growth of the group and to have an internal growth rate between 9 and 11%, to progress between 22, 23, 24, our OMDA by 400 basis points compared to 2021, and to increase the conversion rate of this OMDA into free cash flow so that it might reach 50%. And so this leads me, once I've told you about the context in which we are building Worldline, I will let you reread our results of the highlights of 2022, which from my point of view are an excellent start of this 2022-2024 plan.
The annual results of the group, indeed, were perfectly achieved, financially speaking and operationally speaking, achieved or even overshot. And in parallel with that, as we also published, reported, we achieved all of our objectives in terms of corporate, social, and environmental responsibility as set down by our board of directors. The objectives of the year for the multi-year plan, Trust 2025, were indeed very well achieved. Also, last year was a very important year for us. It was the second year when we were integrating the Ingenico businesses into our own scope. Marc-Henri will go into the details, but there was major progress made in terms of converging our platforms, connecting up our solutions, setting up integrated sales forces, new and innovative offerings and propositions, the best of the two groups. And we have ahead of us till 2023 and 2024 to round off the integration plan. And the least we can say is that we've made a lot of progress along that path. Now, the commercial dynamic was also excellent last year, too. You all know that these results weren't being seen in the context of a year 2022, which did not resemble what the world thought it would be beforehand. When we prepared the budget for 2022, the world thought it was going to be a year of hypergrowth because we were coming out of COVID, we were getting back to normal, everybody was going to travel all around the world and spend a lot of money, having been locked down, and so on. But that was the scenario everybody bought into at the end of 2021. Obviously, as you all know, 2022 actually was characterized by a major geopolitical crisis very near Europe, and we had hyperinflation that set in as of Q2, more or less, in 2022, and a lot of consequences that we'll go back into later on, macroeconomically speaking. But I think that the way in which, just to stick on this previous slide, thank you, the way in which we managed to maintain our commercial momentum and deliver our results, I think, is quite remarkable. I think we did well as a company, and it was thanks to the commitment of all of our teams, whom I would salute here in passing. It wasn't an easy year for all of you, given all the upheavals going on in the world around us that we hadn't reckoned with previously. And then I'd like to also underline the strategic developments of the group. It was a remarkable year operationally and commercially, but also a very rich year strategically speaking. And we made three integrations of acquisitions that were announced in 2021, three new acquisitions in 2022, and we conducted two disposals, especially payment terminals. That was a legacy business from the acquisition of Ingenico. If I look at the major highlights and the figures of the year, the operating income, for example, our objectives are recapped here on the left. The idea was to have organic growth of at least 8%, an improvement of our OMDA between 100 and 150 basis points, and a free cash flow, the conversion rate of the OMDA into free cash flow, that is, of about 45%. On the right, you see what we did. Organic growth, even quite a bit beyond our initial ambition of at least 8%, it stood at 10.7%. And that, in the end of the day, is the best organic performance we've ever put in as Worldline Group since 2014. That shows quite clearly that we have indeed fast-tracked our ability to generate revenues internally, organically. Now, regarding profitability, the group also positioned its profitability improvement at 110 basis points in the bracket indicated, and the conversion ratio was 46% nearly, as you see here on the screen, higher than the objective of 45% that we'd set ourselves. So you see here the crystallization in the second year of the integration of Ingenico, the crystallization of the benefits of the synergies that we're deriving from that merger, but also the strength, the clout that Worldline is starting to represent in a transforming market, which is starting to send us back this perception, especially in terms of business development and in terms of commercial perception, the fact that a group like Worldline was indeed necessary in the transformation of the payment world in Europe. So these results were achieved with also, as you know, the commitment that we made to be an exemplary company in terms of societal and environmental responsibility. And we measure this. It's part of our Trust 2025 program. We look at the independent rating agencies that rate us. They keep on rating us. They're totally external, independent bodies. And I have great pleasure in being able to say that last year we continued on the same thrust as the previous years. We recorded substantial progress in the ratings we obtained from these non-financial rating agencies. We've named some of them here, some of the large companies that keep on rating us on different aspects. Our different policies in Worldline are rated. You have an increase by 3 points compared with last year by one of the rating agencies. We're heading the bunch if you look at the 82 companies rated. So look at also GSI, 4 points better than the previous year. That makes us one of the best companies in that table. And what's important is to bear in mind that we work in the digital world. We've got lots of talented people. We've got sales forces. We've got architects. We've got people, experts in cryptography and all sorts of technological domains. And we've got to be all over the world one of the companies that people want to join. We want to attract in all those talented people we need. Last year, we doubled the number of countries. We obtained a Great Place to Work accreditation that is taking all sectors of activity together. We featured among the top 100 of the companies that are deemed to be the best places to work. When you are thinking about joining a company, we're one of the companies that people want to join. And we got accreditation from the Institute Top Employer, as it's called, in Europe and in Asia, the Top Employer Institute. So what I'm trying to share with you just now is our extreme focus on our strategic projects, our strategic plans, and the execution of our financial objectives. That has never deflected us from CSR requirements. It's not just a plus point, it's something that's in the very heart of what we're trying to do, because we are rich thanks to the high-tech people working with us and the highly competent people working with us. Now, the management team last year, in the second year of the integration of Ingenico, was renewed in depth, reshuffled, so to speak, reduced, and there are more women on board. Now, the executive committee has gone down from 18 to 12 members. That's about a third less. It is a third less. And then we renewed 40% of the members of the main, the people heading up the main business lines, service lines. We've renewed a lot of people in posts. Some people have gone out on retirement, and we've appointed other people, of course, in their stead. So a lot of reshuffling and some major changes in the financial department under Gregory Lamberti and the human resources department. We have Florence who joined us too. So after 2 years of integration, we had the intermediate phase, of course. We kept lots of people on board to get to know each other and so on. But now we're in cruising speed regarding integration. And it was important to bring down the executive committee to a more smaller team. And Marc-Henri and myself are convinced that we've got to organise ourselves in such a way that I will oversee strategic developments, do investor relations and take care of the major strategic partnerships. And Marc-Henri every day is out there making sure the budget is executed and technological and commercial developments are taken care of properly. So we're a highly joined up team, however. We have to split the work up some way, but we, of course, are doing it as a united front the whole time. Now, I wanted to start off talking about our acquisitions. Now, we made some remarkable acquisitions in the last few years, and maybe I should start off by saying that the important transaction of 2022 was actually a disposal. As you know, we disposed of the payment terminals business. That was completed, and that simplified the scope of the group. And at the same time, we deleveraged a lot. We reduced the debt carried in our balance sheet, and that was quite appreciable when the interest rate started to swing back up again, and it gave us more headroom, more flexibility, strategically speaking, to continue with our strategic development plans. And as I said earlier, we also quite efficiently closed off previous integrations, and then we started building in entities into merchant services. The Eurobank merchant services in business in Greece that was acquired. And in Australia, we came in with a remarkable partnership with the ANZ Bank. It's fully operational now. And also, we arrived in Italy with the acquisition of Axepta Italy. And that's their major moves because they afford great growth potential with banks as distribution partners. They're well-known household names, leaders in those domestic markets. And also, they do represent a substantially important addition to our scope, to our business portfolio, and to our revenues, given the number of merchants we now address. And when you arrive in a country, you can meet the needs of all the major international merchants that want to bring down to a limited number of players all the transactions that they might want to do in lots and lots of countries around the world. So there were often pan-European requests for proposals put out, and they want a company like Worldline to do the job for them with one single contract and all their payment flows, e-commerce or physical stores. Let it all be addressed by one single company. It makes their lives easier, and it gives us scale effects and more competitive pricing. And also, it's easier to innovate because all of the transactions are concentrated, focused on one single platform. That's our platform. So whenever we open a new country, we do more than just capture flows and look at growth prospects in that domestic market. We actually enrich our value proposition vis-a-vis all the international merchants out there, household names that you're all familiar with, I'm sure. So to sum it up, if I look at 2022 in the rearview mirror before I give the floor to my colleagues, I think we can consider that that year, 2022, was indeed a year where you'll see the framework for the plan bringing us up to 2024. And we have fast-tracked growth, we've fast-tracked profitability, we've developed innovation and partnerships and capital expenditure in our technologies and pursuing consolidation as well of the industry. So I think we're ticking all the right boxes in 2022 overall, growth achieving an unrivaled level in our history in Worldline and profitability also. And of course, we had capital expenditure to do with partnerships we engaged on, and they underpinned our the execution of our strategic plan. Three new integrations done and three new acquisitions, and we overshot our objectives in terms of corporate social responsibility, as well as we said earlier. So it was an important year, a really important year. First year in a three-year plan, of course. And before I give the floor to my colleagues, I'd like to talk about another work stream we have in hand at the moment. You didn't hear much about this last year, but it kept us going quite a lot. It's our partnership with Crédit Agricole. You can imagine it was also in the forefront of the work we did in 2022 to be able to be announced at the start of this year. Now, I'd like to share with you at this point the importance of this move for our group. And I'm really very, very happy to be able to make this announcement because it marks a new phase in the development of Worldline in its historical market, which is the French market. This is where we were born. This is where we're listed. But paradoxically, Worldline wasn't doing its leading job, that is, merchant acquiring, in the French market up to now, because the French market was really representative of the situation I was describing at the very start of my talk, that is that in Europe, the banks controlled all of the payment activities in most of the countries. And that remained the case in France up to very recently, because we entered into this partnership with Crédit Agricole. Now, why is France an important market then for Worldline? It's not just the emotional dimension because we started off in France and it's nice to do our leading job, the job we're good at here in France too. It's not just that. There is also the fact that France is the second largest economy in Europe. It so happens that it's also the leading market for digital payments in Europe because we've already strongly developed card-based payments here in France. And France also has a local payment scheme, bank cards, carte bancaire, as they're called here in France. You all have them in your wallets, I'm sure. This was an offering that the Worldline Group didn't have because we didn't do acquiring in this country. So it was the arrival of Worldline onto the largest European market. And we're doing this in partnership with the largest retail bank on the French market. So it's a major move, a really important move for us to access a whole untapped area of future potential growth. And also, we're doing it in partnership with a bank that has a footprint that is totally enrooted here in France, around the country. Crédit Agricole, on its side, has done detailed strategic analysis on its positioning in payments. And it came to the conclusion that it needed a partnership with a company like Worldline, which was going to give it what it needed, what it was missing to be a growth engine in payment services on the French market. And this identity of vision and of appetite, we for the French market in partnership with the bank and Crédit Agricole convinced that a strategic partnership and technological partner like Worldline was necessary for it. It's thanks to all that that we came together. Now, concretely speaking, this partnership will be operational as of 2025, and we've got to go through all sorts of procedures, antitrust approvals and approval by the social partners, obtain licenses from the Banque de France and the French payment schemes. Well, this will enable us to combine the best of those two groups in payment services.
First, the Crédit Agricole will bring its distribution power, its intimacy with the merchants, its deep knowledge in all the stratas of merchants in France, from the smallest to the largest, and the power of its brand. To give you an idea, the Crédit Agricole Group is 16,000 professional counselors who every day meet merchants, and 16,000, it's as many as all the employees in the world of the Worldline Group. It's a commercial force that represents the entire workforce of Worldline. And the group to have these products and services, its products and services distributed by this sales force, this is a huge opportunity. Worldline will provide its technology, its European scale effects, the possibility to engage the international accounts and its expertise in this industry that we have developed globally. So it is a perfect partnership, a perfect complementarity. We'll provide technology, and Crédit Agricole will bring the power of its presence and its distribution. And we've proven the efficiency of this model in many other countries in Europe, in Germany, in Italy, in Greece, in the northern countries, and now in Australia. So we know that once we'll be operational with the Crédit Agricole, we will have a new driver, a new growth driver for you. So this is what I wanted to share with you on our activities in 2022. And now I'd like to give the floor to Marc-Henri Desportes, who is our joint general manager, who is going to present a certain number of operational, commercial, and technological developments. Thank you, Gilles, and good afternoon. I'm going to begin by commenting further our operational roadmap, our plans in terms of the integrations, our developments in terms of products and innovations, our HR strategy supporting these developments, and our commercial performance, which is the result of all these initiatives. Our objective is to create a full range of payment services combining the best assets from all our acquisitions by connecting them together and by migrating the volumes of the former platforms to the new connected platforms to propose to our clients the best product functionalities, the best efficiency, and the best agility related to these new technologies. 2022 is the fourth and last year of the integration plan of six payment services, which is now completed. The investment peak in the integration of Ingenico, the plan will be finalized by 2024, coupled with some significant developments from the side of products so we can accelerate our organic growth and the recruitment of more than 1,000 employees in key functions to feed the growth of our businesses. So 2020 was rich in innovation. We are producing, we're recruiting new talents for the development of our commercial department, and I'll go back on this. Now let's begin with our integration plan. All the synergies of supplement services are carried out. They've been totally achieved at the end of 2022. That's a total of 110 million euros of synergies over 4 years. This is a major success, totally in line with our initial plan. The integration of Ingenico is on the right path. The components of our target operations are online. We have integrated the components. As for the most recent integrations, it is in line with our plan. And all this is pursued for Eurobank. And as for ANZ, our joint venture in Australia, the portal and the new platform is operational, and the first transactions are underway since September 2022. And we are accelerating the migration of the merchants and conquering new merchants. All these achievements shows that we can deliver more than 200 million euros of synergies between 2021 and 2024. As mentioned by Gilles in his first part, the core of the reactor of your group is in its ability to innovate and its product strategy. And all this piggyback to high performance and new technology. Let's begin with technology, which is the basis of our strategy. In 2022, we executed a major advance with the merger of our main acceptance platforms, Ingenico and acquisition platforms. And that was the strength of Worldline. And this allowed us to accelerate the development of combined offers according to the merchants, their size, and the access channel. We continued the migration of our platforms towards the cloud by integrated new APIs, which are interfaces open to our partners and which are differentiating in our commercial successes. So based on this technology, we could contribute to deploy and add some new products like the vertical solutions for some specific sectors, such as Travel Hub for traveling or the generalization of our omnichannel offers more generally. In 2022, we also enriched our commercial strategy with the launching and the finalization of two major innovative projects. The first is the opening of our Experience and Innovation Center, which is a real showroom of what is the most innovative and disruptive that we've used to cover our clients and partners. And OneWeb is our internet platform, commercial platform, unique platform for the small merchants. And to end, we have opened new market segments with the acquisitions of SoftPos and OPP that I've already mentioned. And this allows us to address the micro merchants with SoftPos, the payment solutions on the mobile terminal, on the mobile phones of the merchant, and OPP, these are online platform payments for the circular payment, for DC2C business also. So this is in addition to our value proposal of Worldline, and this supports our merchant activity. All these achievements, operational and technological, are possible if it is supported by an adapted human strategy. And this is based on several pillars. The optimized recruitment that allows us to attract talents, initiatives like the Pioneer PTech, which is a new program for the campuses so that we can capture the best talents, an internal leadership program to develop our workforce by increasing the diversity of the profiles to have something more dynamic. We have developed a technological line. You know that there's no training on electronic payments. This is why it is important to have this initiative. So we've created a community of experts in the field of digital payments, so that we can anticipate internal needs and to improve the agility and collaboratory experience. We have digitalized all our processes. And this is an initiative that has been totally deployed today, our HR process especially. And this allowed us to obtain in 2022 this record number that Gilles talked about of certified countries, the best company for to work in. And a lot of employees of our group, well, that is our major asset. They have a lot of skills in payments, and they are deploying all the operational bricks for the proper execution of our strategy. I'd like to thank them all for their commitment and their contribution to the success of 2022 and for the future years. Now I'd like to go into the details of a few major contracts that we entered in 2022. And according to me, these are examples that demonstrate the strength and the relevance of our solutions, especially the combination of Worldline and Ingenico solutions that I was talking about just a few moments ago. We're going to begin with our major business, which are services to merchants. And here you're mentioning two contracts, one which is one of the major contracts that we've ever signed in this area, which is the contract with Lufthansa, the third major airline company in the world, which is a symbol of our vertical differentiation strategy in this domain, especially transport and airline transportation, which is shows the relevance of our offer in e-commerce and internet payments. On another very different market, but which is very important for Worldline, which is retail, we've signed the contract with Monoprix, which shows that in retail we are an uncircumventable player, and the quality of our omni-channel solution for the flows in store and online. And now if I talk about services to financial institutions, the FS activity, well, here the major contract is the contract signed with ING, which is a particular server. We're very proud of it because what's new is that we signed a unique contract under which our group will be the only partner to process and ensure the processing of the issuing of ING cards in all the geographies of this group. So the central platform will be able to process all its cards, debit and credit, in all the different geographies. And we believe that this is a very first time. It's very scattered with a lot of domestic markets. And to have such a contract, a pan-European contract, multi-country contract, it is very good for our strategy in our platform for financial services also. And third point, in the MTS business line, our ability to develop and operate a unique mobility system based on our mobility marketplace solution. This was decisive to when the West England Combined Authority, they chose us thanks to this possibility to combine reservation booking, e-ticketing, and payment in a single solution. It is multimodal, and this is extremely modern and turned towards the future for major European cities. So each of these signatures, this is a recognition of the relevance and the validity of our investment in our products. And I'm going to give you the figures in our major business, which is services to merchants, and this commercial dynamics with the performance indicator, the number of merchants. 2022, we gained 85,000 new merchants in all our geographies. So the basis of merchants is 1,250,000. This is a very satisfactory growth of this merchant base compared to 2021. This year, we've gone beyond 40%. The pace at which we have 60,000 new merchants per year, that was fixed in our objective, in our plan. This is a major success, which is confirmed since the acquisition of Ingenico. This confirms the coherence, the combination of offers, platforms, the strength of our distribution model, which is based on direct distribution with our sales force and with the help of partners, partnering banks. So this is very satisfactory. And since 2020, since the date of the integration of Ingenico, we've increased our merchant base with 200 merchants with a growth of 9% a year, which is an extremely robust base. And to end with my section, I'll have to go back on some more economic data on these merchants. So all these actions that enlarge this base, it grew one figure, which is very important for us, which is the MSV, which is the revenue of the merchants that would could operate financially in our electronic payments systems. So in 2022, the MSV for Worldline increased by 22% compared to 2021 to reach 320 billions of euros, which is a very solid performance on the European acquisition market. And we will keep winning market shares in store and online, because when you look at the growth of MSV in stores, it's 21%, online is 27%, so we have a good dynamics. And with this curve that is appearing in pink on this graph here, which is 2023, you see that the momentum in 2023 is very good, and we still have a double-digit growth. And at this stage, we don't see any recession, any economic recession. And that is very encouraging for our activity. And I'm going to give the floor to Gregory, who is going to present our financial performance. Thank you.
Merci, Marc-Henri, et bonjour à
tous. Thank you, Marc-Henri. Good afternoon, everybody. I'll start off with the key figures for 2022, reflecting the fine performance of your company and the achievement or overshooting of all of the annual objectives. The revenues of your group, 4.4 billion euro in 2022, growth of 18.7%, beyond our expectations, of course. Our OMDA, 1.1 billion euro, that's a margin of 26%, an increase of 110 basis points compared with 2021. In spite of the inflationary context, and thanks to the delivering of the expected synergies and the operational leverage generated thanks to the growth of the group, the free cash flow found 420 million euro, conversion ratio of OMDA of 45.9%, greater than the objective of 45% that was set. The normalized net income of the group, 545 million euro, that's 12.5% of the revenues, equivalent to diluted earnings per share of 1.88 euro per share, up by 22% compared with 2021. Now, more precisely concerning the performance of our service lines, the MS merchant activities posting growth, organic growth of 14% in 2022, thanks to commercial acquiring that grew quite a lot, and also the sound performance of our acceptance activities. Financial services up by 2.5%, impacted throughout the year by the renegotiation of certain historical contracts that we had. And also, finally, for METS, the revenues up by 7.3%, driven by good dynamics in e-ticketing in particular. That is reflected by overall growth of 18.7% for the full year. For the OMDA, 110 basis points of an improvement achieved thanks to the growth and profitability of merchant services, driven by synergies from the previous acquisitions, and also given the operational leverage we had thanks to those growth activities that partially absorbed the impact of inflation and personnel costs. FS and METS were affected by a lengthier adaptation time, and our costs are mainly fixed in an inflationary environment. That was just the way it was. Now, the income statement next. The non-recurring items, 529 million euro, made up of the following items. The depreciation of customer relationships and patents, as you see here, 268 million. And then we see the reflection of the most recent integration, the acquisition of SBS, and also the peak of the integration costs for Ingenico, coupled up with new acquisitions. And all these costs, then, you see, non-cash effect of 47 million euro in total, and we booked charges given the disposal of METS in Latin America as well. Consequently, the operating income for 2022 stands at 335 million euro. The financial income is stable, flat at 41 million euro, less, and tax -79 and normative taxation rate at a bit more than 23%. Given all of these items and the contribution of 88 million euro from the divestment of TSS, the net income group share 299 million euro. Normalized net income, 545 million euro, as you see here. That is 12.5% of the revenues, up by 23%. Regarding the cash flow statements, the main parameters in our free cash flow generation are as follows. After the OMDA, we have capital expenditure of 325 million euro. That is 7.4% of the revenues. That figure is quite in line with the investment calendar set down. This year, we invested substantially in our products, and also we supported a lot of investment in Australia to develop our service platform after entering that market. Excluding the investments to do with ANZ, we have about 7% of revenues in the bracket, which is quite in line with our objectives announced when we announced our strategic plan. So the working capital requirement variation in December 2022, positive contribution of 100 million euro, reflecting the alignment underway of the contractual conditions for Worldline and Ingenico. The integration costs are in line with the expectations and reflect the peak in investment in the integration of Ingenico and also the acquisitions that were the most recent ones, that is Axepta, ANZ, and Eurobank. All in all, the free cash flow stands at 520 million euro, that is 45.9% of OMDA, above the objective of 45%. So quite a good performance all told, reflecting our ability to achieve synergies whilst optimizing the implementation costs and a rigorous policy of a tight cash management. Let's look at the net debt as it evolved over the year. In 2022, we deleveraged by 900 million euro, thanks to the 520 millions of cash flow generated that we mentioned. Also, thanks to the 300 million euro generated by the disposal of TSS minus the acquisitions of the year, and additionally 100 million euro coming from the disposal of the Visa shares. So at the end of the year, our net debt stood at 2.2 billion euro. That is 1.9 times the OMDA. And if you include the 300 million euro worth received on the 1st of January for the disposal of TSS, well, it's 1.7 times is our debt-to-equity ratio. That is quite in line with our expectations, and it gives us a good credit rating, good credit profile. And that is something that's very differentiating these days in the European landscape that has lots of room for consolidation yet. And a lot of our peers are indeed quite indebted. So let's have a look at Q1 of 2023 and the main highlights there. After 2022, marked by strong growth, 10.7%, our first quarter once again posts good revenue dynamics with organic growth, 9.2% at group level. I'd also like to insist on the performance of MS. It's the sixth quarter in a row where we have double-digit growth, with almost 13% in Q1. We have had to also absorb the last quarterly negative impact because we, of course, discontinued totally our business activities in Russia. That was stopped in February 2022, of course. So regarding FS and METS, the performance is quite in line with our expectations. FS is quite in phase with the plan. METS went through a soft startup period because of the high comparative base with the previous year. So concerning the partnership with Crédit Agricole, we've gone into the details of that. Gilles went into those details. And all of these achievements augur well for 2023. And we can confirm our objectives. So let's look at the divisional performance. Overall organic growth of 9.2% and revenues of 1.1 billion euro at group level for Q1. As we mentioned earlier, MS is continuing on this double-digit path with a performance of 12.6% driven by strong growth in commercial acquiring, as you can see on the chart here that Marc-Henri mentioned too. Sound performance since the start of the year. Financial services went up by 2.3% as planned. And following the signature of the agreement with ING at the end of last year, we're continuing to record good business developments. And regarding METS, the revenues remained fairly flat with good underlying growth, whereas the re-insourcing of a telecommunications contract in France at the end of the first half of 2022 created a high comparative base. For the forecast for 2023 now, as was mentioned previously, the performance was very satisfactory indeed in 2022 and continued into Q1 of 2023. And on that basis, we're fairly confident in our ability to achieve our annual objectives, made up of organic growth of revenues between 8 and 10%, an improvement of the OMDA margin that should be greater than 100 basis points, and a conversion rate of the OMDA into free cash flow, which should be between 46 and 48%. Our forecasts for 2023 are fully in line with our three-year plan. I'll give the floor back to Gilles before concluding. He'll talk about the stock price of the company and talk about our environmental strategy as well. So it's back to you, Gilles. Thank you, Sir Gilles. Thank you, Gregory. I wanted to talk about our equity story in Worldline and also give you a fuller understanding of what's going on in our industry at large. As you know, after basically in the course of 2021 reaching record highs in terms of multiples and valuations in all the industry, all the companies went through that period, and then we all went down straight after that for exogenous reasons to do with the macroeconomic environment mainly. And, of course, sometimes there is the perception of investors of the type of company that we are. So we're a listed company. There are lots of other listed companies out there. You've all heard about the huge changes in the macroeconomic context that has affected companies with the geopolitical consequence of the war in Ukraine, the energy prices skyrocketing, monetary policies changed by central banks, and, you know, the easing policy to support growth, and growth companies like ours are affected by what goes on in the macroeconomic environment. And then it was said that we'd have economic slowdown on our hands, and they wanted to create a disconnect with the inflation rate trend that was starting off. So we thought it was going to be great growth, and then it was said, no, we don't want that kind of growth. There's too much inflation, so we'll do something about it. And we had to come to terms with all those chopping and changing in terms of monetary policies. And in general, companies that are growing like ours just had to come to terms with this, payment companies like ours in particular. So when you look at what happened over the last 18 months and take account of that background, what do we see? We see here on this slide the main players that are listed in the payments world. You can see Worldline here, number two on the chart, and the stock price. You see these prices were compiled since the 1st of January 2022. That's about 18 months now, since the turnaround started taking place on the financial markets in the US and in Europe. So you see all the major payment companies, the listed ones, the European ones and the American ones, and also the newcomers like Adyen, Toast and Shopify and Square, the little black square here, and PayPal, and also those that are said to be consolidating partners, Fiserv, Global Payments, Nexi, FIS, and so on. So we realize that we can't be satisfied with the stock market performance over the last 18 months. Obviously, it does not at all reflect the quality of the 2022 results we've just shared with you, which were unanimously received and acknowledged by the analysts as being very good, excellent. And that is the situation of most of our peers in the payments industry, with the exception of one American company, that's FIS. They had disappointments at the end of last year in the execution of their budget, but all the other players otherwise on the page here are growth companies improving their profitability, nearly all of them anyway. So this decorrelation between the intrinsic performance of the companies and the valuation given to the stocks by investors, it's a really abrupt change. And before the interest rates turned around, there was exuberance on the marketplaces given the what was going on in the technology sector and so on. But all of a sudden, the brutal correction was totally decorrelated from the actual performance of these companies. And behind all of this, of course, we have the fears born in the financial markets that the recession instigated by the increase in interest rates and then the exogenous factors like war and energy prices and everything that went on during COVID. The fact is this sector in particular was penalized because it was perceived to post less growth. So if there's more unemployment around in the general economy, people won't be making payments much, and companies like ours won't do as well. That was the perception. So investors kept on talking about the recession. It's supposed to be happening every time they talk about it, and we haven't seen it yet. So the volume of revenues processed by Worldline on these platforms is actually going up 22% last year. So that's because of our commercial development, our business development, and also thanks to the results garnered in, the revenues generated by our sales forces. 22% of growth in revenues of the 1.2 million merchants managed by Worldline. That's not recession. So we show all these figures to the investors, and for the moment their fear is maybe not now, but there will be a recession around the corner. And at some point, the revenues of the merchants will shrink. That's what they think. And some will go bankrupt and so on. And they think that these figures will turn around. So that's the situation we're in. It's not very pleasant. The results we're producing are quite in line with our plans. And that nonetheless hasn't brought back the investors all of that performance. So what we can be satisfied at, if we look at this slide, is that all told, you know, the whole industry was affected by this. And given that, Worldline is one of the companies that was able to withstand the upheavals the best. We have sound fundamentals. We've got good business development underway. And far from losing market shares, we've been winning market shares, gaining market shares. But it's also got to do with a commitment that we gave, as I said to you, on this date last year. We made commitments to the investors massively. We had to give them facts, and then they make up their own minds. They're investors, after all. They will decide. But we wanted to give them all of the ingredients they needed to make the right decision. And we recalled for them what we're talking about when we're talking about payments, including when you fear a recession, what happened in the past when there were recessions, and what happened the income of payment companies. So that's what we tell them. I'm not paid to speculate on recessions or how deep they might be or anything like that, but I'm paid to make sure that the investors have all the information at hand to enable them to make the right decision regarding our company, to know if a recession will impact us or not.
And what the slide shows is that we have massively engaged with our teams, investors and analysts, around three themes. The first is to recall the fundamentals of the payment industry in Europe, which is very different in terms of structure from the United States. To tell them that in Europe, 50% of the retail payment volumes are still carried out in cash or with checks. So we structurally benefit from the movement from cash to digital, and this abstraction from all the macro. Each year, we pay a little more on the net, a little less with our banking cards, a little less with our smartphones, with our contactless payments, and that is good for Worldline. And the second thing is that the evolution of the market needs is going in our direction. Our vision was to say that Europe needs scale and technology, and that is exactly what the industrialists in the payment sector are providing to the bank: scale, innovation, and technology. And finally, there are some major consolidation prospects in a market which is highly fragmented. This gives us prospects with smaller players, and we can keep consolidating, but not just us. There are other players who are engaged in this strategy in Europe. So the second field of communication is to recall that fundamentally the execution of our plan was perfect in the past 8 years. So fundamentally, today, as demonstrated in 2022, we're following a track, we're improving, we're growing, there's more profitability, we've crossed a certain number of complex situations in 2014 in the company. It was not just a positive macroeconomy, and we have kept making acquisitions and strategic developments because, as Gregory said, our result was cleared, and we were invited by all European banks to discuss with them, to discuss the potential partnerships, transactions, acquisitions we can do to help them transform themselves in the future. And the third message is to say that we will keep engaging investors and analysts, because last year, in the last 18 months, we met more than 1,500 of them with our team, and we will keep up with our commitments because this is a moment of hyper-volatility and investors have trouble going back to the fundamentals of the sector and to differentiate the macroeconomic fears from the sectors that are affected. We are a very resilient sector, even if there is a recession. And so this message has to trickle down, and we're a very good company in that sector. So the result of this engagement, I'm happy to see it here, is that 75% of the analysts covering our security are buying Worldline. And the average is 53 euros. That is roughly more than 40% considering our current curve. So this gives me confidence over the midterm. This volatility will pass by. This fear of recession will disappear, whether the recession arrives or not. People will think about other things. The interest rates will change, and then the market will come back to the quality of the assets we represent. These are structural growth assets with strong operational levers, with very good strategic perspectives. Before concluding, I wanted to share with you our environmental strategy. Our environmental strategy is very dear to Worldline. There's no fashion here. Since 2016, this group, after being IPO'd, was positioned as a pioneer to reduce its environmental impact beyond its CSR actions. So right from 2016 onwards, we have reduced. And more than that, we totally offset our emissions at that time because we needed more time to start this reduction strategy. So in 2016, we started offsetting our direct emissions at the time. And then very quickly, we set up our reduction plans to reduce our carbon footprint for our business scope directly under our control, that is scopes 1 and 2. And we do this. And we validated with two plans, which is validated by the SBT Institute, Science Based Target, that gives us the certification that our plan, the results of our plan, are in compliance with environmental trajectories. That is to at least contribute to reduce global warming or maintain global warming at 1.5 degrees, or in certain number of actions to go under the 2 degrees to slow down global warming. Your company has set up these plans for several years, and what you see here is that per millions of euros of revenue, the carbon footprint of Worldline on the scopes directly under its control has already come down by 69% throughout these years. And we're going to continue. Our major challenge, as many companies, is to manage our scope 3, that is our indirect emissions, not ours, not our data centers, our offices, our premises, our cars, our traveling, but those of our clients, the impact that we have on the carbon footprint of our clients. So we have to use other levers, our suppliers, and the entire payment ecosystem. So just to go back to the next slide to show you that we are actively engaged to develop new levers so that we can reduce the total group footprint, direct and indirect. For our clients, this means to rethink the eco-design of our products, analyze the life cycle of our payments, identify where we can get rid of them, change regulations. In France, you've seen for some time, you have the possibility of not asking for the tickets coming from the payment terminal. The ticket weighs a lot in the carbon processing, in our digital processing, because that's the only thing that's not digital when you have a card payment. So when you rematerialize it, you have a lot of carbon. And our operations are working deeply on how we consume IT services, how we can optimize our data centers, and how we source ourselves with our suppliers, part of our servers, our archiving systems, our real-time cryptography machines, all the hardware used by our colleagues, how we can work upstream also with the material manufacturers, smartphone manufacturers, cable manufacturers so that they can sign contracts with us so that their own strategy to reduce their carbon footprint will be part of our strategy, will be part of our policies. I'd like to thank the board also and the CSR committee that is engaged with us to set up our action plan to go towards carbon neutrality by 2050, because this means beyond this effort to reduce all the direct and indirect emissions of the group, there will be a residual dimension. And for this residual dimension, we will have to set up sequestration, carbon sequestration programs that we will fund so as to ensure a perfect accountability of our actions and so as to totally eliminate through sequestration all the residual carbon flows that are generated by the group in spite of all the efforts we will make ourselves and in our ecosystem to eliminate all that. Thank you for your attention. I just have to end by saying that you should take away four messages. The group is in perfect marching order to execute its vision in Europe. We really believe that in the coming years, we will have some beautiful opportunities to keep building this European leader, this world class in this business. And we had no peer in this area a few years ago. Our results in 2022 with this double-digit growth, this growth in services to merchants, this is with the integration of Ingenico, we're really growing. There are fears about recession that should be here, and the performance at the beginning of the quarter don't show any signs of slowing down at Worldline. And according to our outlooks for this summer, the volumes are good and very satisfactory. And more than ever, we will partner with banks, European banks, to build the new European payments architecture. That's been my vision for the past 10 years, and I'm very happy about this symbolic operation with Crédit Agricole, which is very important from the financial and operational point of view. And until the end of the decade and for the next decade, all this will be operational. And this is a real symbol, this strategy to work together with banks to redetermine the payments, the future of payments in Europe. This is extremely important. Thank you for your attention, and we'll be ready to answer your questions in due time. Thank you. Thank you, Gilles. I'd like to thank the entire executive team for this presentation. Now it's up to me to talk about corporate governance. Now, this report was prepared together with Georges Pochet, our lead director, and the appointment committee. So all the details are given in the URD, and I'm going to focus on the most important aspects. So the board today has adapted profiles with solid skills, adequate skills, thanks to very involved directors. The composition of the board is well adapted, therefore, to the company. The assessment has highlighted the relevance of all the topics covered, as well as the quality of the preparatory work and all the discussions. The gradual reduction in the size of the board, as announced last year, is a real opportunity to strengthen the relations between directors, and this will also strengthen our team spirit. And all this is done with a great spirit. The quality of the dialogue between the board and the management team was underlined this year, and it is particularly true regarding the remarkable collaboration between the general manager and the chairman of the board. And with Gilles Crapinet, we have weekly meetings, and this shows our close and tight and efficient collaboration. So our board is operating efficiently, and we are very fluid in our decision-making. There has been constant progress in terms of governance, and this will be pursued thanks to the enrichment and the regular monitoring of the board plan under my supervision and that of the lead director. I regularly speak with the board members, with the directors, and we have very good relations. There's a very good communication between the members of the board, amongst themselves and with the managerial team, and I'm delighted about that. And together with the general manager, I have spoken with each of the member of the executive committee, and I must say that they are of a very high quality. As for the board's activity, 2022 was a very intensive year, considering the amount of work we had carried out, the type of topics we dealt with, and during the 11 meetings, all these were carefully attended to by the directors, and the attendance rate was 99%. And as for the five committees, they met 3 to 5 times each, and the attendance rate was close to 97%. So this remarkable attendance rate shows the cohesion, the deep engagement of all the directors in the work of the board and in the work of its committees. Now, what were the main topics dealt with? So your board and the committees were very active this year, once again, particularly considering all the multiple operations carried out during the year, like the disposal of the payment terminals of TSS or the operations in Italy, in Greece, or in Australia. The directors worked deeply on the major strategic verticals of the group, have looked at the market evolutions, have looked at the investment strategies, so as to implement the 3-year strategy plan. The board also reviewed the compensation of the managers. This will be presented to you later on. We've worked together to gradually reduce the size of the board without altering its balance, complementarity, and its proper functioning, which characterizes it today. So besides reviewing the results, the budgets, the financial communications, the board looked at all the risks, compliance, and cybersecurity, which are extremely important in our business sector. The non-financial performance was clearly monitored, and the board worked on the group CSR strategy and the implementation and the realization of the company CSR program, which is called Trust 2025. Personally, more than 15 years ago, I invested in a French company, which now has become one of the champions of CSR. The board and its committees spend generally more time on CSR to widely apprehend the components and all the applications in the group. With Georges Pauget, together we've worked to ensure the proper functioning of our governance in the spirit of dialogue. We've remained open, we've cooperated with the management team, and they're very dear to us, and I'd like to particularly thank Georges Pauget for his contribution and all his experience.
Let's now look at the composition of the board. When the transaction took place between Worldline and Ingenico, I recall I was the chairman of Ingenico, we set up a transition board. Now, that board, with a broadened composition, was one intended to host the people representing Ingenico to reflect the friendly nature of the transaction and facilitate integration. As indicated previously, the nomination committee has been working since 2021 to gradually bring the size of the enlarged board to a newer size, a size that would be more in compliance with the usual size of comparable boards and comparable companies. To this extent, we've got to meet a concern that was voiced by certain shareholders. And the board of directors therefore decided at the start of 2022 to gradually reduce its size, aiming at a composition, a target composition of 13 directors plus two directors representing employees by 2024. And as planned, this gradual reduction will be initiated as of this year with the reduction of two posts and the censor's post. The plan is to pursue this initiative, and the idea is therefore to do away with two further seats on the board. So we want to maintain the balance and the proper functioning of the board intact, however, and make sure we have complementary types of expertise and profiles within the board. So the nomination committee, to this extent, is pursuing its work in this direction with Georges Pouget, the management team, and myself. So in particular, we're guided by the principle of equality of treatment of board members, and our objective is to guarantee a balanced representation of the main shareholders and strategic partners, maintain also a high level of independence, and preserve complementarity. Also, the soundness and the appropriateness of the profiles and the competencies in the board. So following these discussions, Susan Tolson and Luc Raymond, who is very busy because he's become the chairman of EDF, they've announced their intention to resign, taking effect following this general meeting. And the term of office of Johannes Dijsselhoff from six as a censor will be due to expire following this meeting. And it was not proposed that that should be renewed. On behalf of the board, I'd like to thank these people I've just mentioned for their valuable contributions, their very, very valuable contributions indeed throughout the years. It's been a great honor to sit on the board by their sides. In line with our renewal mechanism that's staggered, of course, the proposal is that on the recommendation of the nomination committee, you should approve the re-election of six members of the board today whose term of office is due to expire this year. And their biographies, of course, are available to you in the Universal Registration Document. Now, firstly, we've got Gilles Grapinet, providing his in-depth knowledge of the business activities and the challenges for the group to us, but also his business knowledge of the industry, his leadership and his strategic vision. These are all essential for us, for the board. And concerning the renewal of his term, I'd just like to say personally he is totally involved every single day in our relationships with our customers and with the employees of the group. Every single day he contributes very importantly to the workings of the company. And he has also agreed to sit on the Social and Environmental Responsibility Committee of the group. And that shows his personal commitment to that. And it's a great pleasure indeed to work with Gilles on a regular basis. That's the renewal of Gilles Grapinet. Now, Gilles Arditi, who also provides his in-depth knowledge of the business activities and the governance of the group to the company, and also enables us to avail of his great expertise in terms of finance, audit, M&A, and investments. He is, of course, a member of the Strategy and Investment Committee, to which he actively contributes. The third post up for renewal is Aldo Cardoso's post. He's a well-known figure in the world of finance, and he provides leading expertise to us in terms of finance and accounting, but also strategy and investments. Aldo actively contributes to the governance and the proceedings of the board, especially in his capacity as chairman of the audit committee, and he's indeed also a member of the strategy and investment committee. Then alongside me, we have Julia Fitzpatrick as well, whose post is due to be renewed. She enables the board to avail of her rich experience in financial transformations, digitalization, and the management of risks. She has a lot of wide knowledge that's drawn from her experience with many, many companies in the financial services industry. And she provides also her point of view coming from the English-speaking world. Julia is an active contributor to the proceedings of the Audit Committee and the Social and Environmental Responsibility Committee. Alongside me, right beside me, we have Thierry Sommelet, who helps the board to avail of his great experience in investments, private and public investments in the sectors of technology, media and telecommunications, and he's an active member of the governance of the company, as he's a member of the Strategy and Investment Committee and also the Nomination and Remuneration Committee. He's from BPI, of course. And he's also, of course, in that capacity, a board member in many other companies. And then we have the renewal of my own office. I am very attached, historically speaking, I would say, to the company. And as chairman of Ingenico, along with Gilles, I had to talk about the combination of our two businesses, and I was really very happy personally that we achieved that and that we combined our two businesses and that Worldline is now a more powerful company. And I would add that a few weeks ago, I purchased more than 20,000 shares in Worldline. And that, I think, shows my confidence in this company, in the future of our strategy and in the strategy as it's been expounded on here today. So renewal of my own office, as well as the five others. Regarding the mode of management, the governance of your company changed a bit last year with the appointment in October of 2021 as chairman of the board of myself, and Gilles Grapinet retained general management. He remained the CEO, of course. This was provided for and announced in the context of the acquisition of Ingenico. So as mentioned previously in the evaluation of the board, this mode of governance proved to be very successful, particularly thanks to the very harmonious functioning, free-flowing functioning between us. And this kind of functioning is very good if the chairman and the CEO get on very well. It's a key factor. So subject to the renewal of the terms of office of the board members we mentioned and your approval of the proposal to change our bylaws concerning the increase in the age of the chairman, it is the age limit of the chairman, it is provided that the board, which will meet following this general meeting, will retain the mode of management that's in place that you can see here on the screen before you. Let's have a look at the composition of the board as it might be after this meeting, if you agree to the proposals on the table. Given the resignation of Susan Tolson and Luc Rimont, the board would then be made up of 17 members, two representing employees, and a representative also of the Social and Economic Committee. The board will then be composed of independent board members to the tune of 66%. It'll have 40% membership, female membership, and an equivalent proportion of non-French directors. The new composition of the board results from our intent to have a board that would be balanced in many, many of its facets. It'll take account of the degree of independence of the members and also the agreements ensuing from the transactions conducted by the group, and will enable us to guarantee representation that will be appropriate of the main shareholders and the strategic partners, such as SIX Group AG, the main shareholder and business partner, BPI France also, substantially important shareholder, and DSV Group, a partner in the context of the PayOne joint venture in Germany. This is the partnership with the German savings banks, DSV. Also, it's balanced in terms of diversity, gender diversity, and diversity in general, but also in terms of competency and expertise. Let's now look at the composition of the specialized board committees after this general meeting, if you approve the resolutions. In the context of the recomposition of the board and its committees, the board, at the recommendation of the nomination committee, is envisioning that we would appoint, following this meeting, Gilles Arditi as member of the Audit Committee and Georges Pouget as chairman of the Remuneration Committee and vice chair of the Nomination Committee. This choice, of course, takes account of their respective experience and competencies, but also the fact that they are independent directors. In this way, the composition of the board committees that you can see on the screen would be the one set up, the one you see on the screen would be the way it would be after this meeting. It is totally in compliance with the recommendations of the AFEP-MEDEF code here in France. Also, each committee, like last year, would be composed of at least 50% of independent board members, in line with the best governance practices. Then regarding diversity and complementarity within the board, the new composition of the board will enable it to continue to avail of many and varied profiles, providing sound and complementary competencies to its proceedings, especially in banking and payment services, IT, investment strategies, governance, but also in terms of risk and compliance or social responsibility. Diversity and complementarity of the profiles and the competencies within the board are illustrated on this screen here, on this slide, which actually concludes my presentation on the governance of the company. Thank you for your attention, ladies and gentlemen. I would now like to call upon Ms. Danielle Lagarde, who is an independent member of the Remuneration Committee, to step this way to present the report from the Remuneration Committee in the absence of the chairman of that committee, who has sent apologies. Thank you, Bernard, says Danielle. Good afternoon, everybody. Mr. Chairman, ladies and gentlemen, dear shareholders, in the absence of Mr. Luc Raymond, the chairman of the committee, who sends apologies, he cannot attend, unfortunately. He asked me to represent him today. I would like to therefore present the report from the Remuneration Committee. My presentation will concern the main items of remuneration in 2022 of the corporate officers, and also the remuneration policy that will be applicable to them. You will find all the details concerning this in the Universal Registration Document for 2022 and the brochure, which I would like you to refer to if you need some details. I'll just provide you with the main highlights here in my presentation. So firstly, the remuneration of 2022, the ex post say on pay, as it's often called. Regarding the censor and the directors, as you can see on the screen, their total compensation remained in 2022 substantially below the total package that stood at €1,200,000. Also, we'd like to recall that Mr. Bernard Bourigeau, chairman of the board, is only paid a fixed annual amount of €300,000. If you don't mind, we'll move on to the remuneration of the executive corporate officers for financial 2022. Firstly, in line with our balanced and demanding practice and policy on this, we've adjusted the objectives for annual variable compensation for 2022 and multi-annual ones that are share-based payments for the years which are 2020, 2021, and 2022 to take account of the changes in the consolidation scope of the group. This follows the achievement of multiple merger and acquisition transactions conducted in that year, like the acquisition of Axepta, ANZ, and Eurobank, and the disposal of the METS business in Latin America. These adjustments, as the transactions went on, are necessary so as to remain with demanding objectives in spite of the contribution of these new scopes. So then we determined the rates of achievement of these predefined objectives that were quantified, demanding, and coherent with the publicly stated ambitions of the group. So the rate of achievement of the annual variable remuneration in 2022 in cash stands at about 113%. For the multi-annual stock-based variable remuneration rate, it stands at about 116%, but it gives rise to a definitive vesting of the stock limited at 100% this year, given the mechanism of capping, which is currently in place, which leads us to reduce the number of stocks acquired in the event of underperformance, but prevents us from going beyond 100% of the grant, even in the event of overperformance. Let's now move on to the 2023 part, that is the ex ante say on pay, as it's often called. Now, firstly, regarding the remuneration of the directors, it's proposed that the compensation policy that you can see as a reminder here on the screen, which comprises in particular the total package for the activities of the board and the annual fixed remuneration of the chairman, should remain unchanged for 2023. That's the proposal. As in previous years, I'd recall that Mr. Gilles Grapinet, the board members representing employees and the director appointed at the proposal of BPI France Thierry Sommelet, in this case, will not receive remuneration in respect of their board membership and the fact that they're members of committees. Let's move on to the remuneration of the executive corporate officers, if you don't mind. In line with the intentions we announced last year, the board of directors has decided to propose to your meeting the fact of improving a revision of the remuneration policy of executive corporate officers. However, at the express request of the latter, given the macroeconomic context that we have currently, that's a difficult one, inflationary and volatile, this new policy would take effect only as of the 1st of January 2024. The current policy for the remuneration of executive corporate officers would therefore remain unchanged for 2023. However, the new policy presented on this slide, whose details feature in the universal registration document, will be applicable as of the 1st of January 2024, if you approve it, of course.
The appointment committee wants to have a transparent policy, a balanced one, and more in line with the market. The committee has analyzed in full details the profiles and the performances of those people in question, the market practices, and those of the competitors. We've also taken into account the interests of all the stakeholders. In this respect, we want to preserve a large predominance of the variable share of the remuneration, which is 72% of the remuneration total target annual remuneration, so as to maintain a strong alignment in the interests of the executive managers, the shareholders, and the stakeholders. The weighing of the indicators, I wanted to present the weighing of the objectives applicable to the short-term variable remuneration of the executive corporate officers in 2023. To support the ambitions and the objectives developed within the framework of the CSR group program, which is called Trust 2025, which you've already mentioned, and to follow the best market practices, the board had decided last year to introduce a combined internal criterion of performance related to CSR. This criterion will apply only from the second half onwards because it is better to measure the CSR performance over a period of at least 1 year. It represents 20% of the short-term variable remuneration in the second half and 10% of this annual remuneration. We've decided to renew for the second half of 2023 the combined performance CSR criterion with limited adaptations and its weighting. We've slightly rebalanced for 2023 the weighing of the financial indicators so that the OMDA indicator might have the same weight as the growth in revenue, so as to take into account the attention required on the margin considering the inflationist macroeconomic context and the pressure resulting on the cost basis of the group. Mr. Chairman, dear ladies and gentlemen, shareholders, thank you for your attention. Thank you, Daniel. I'd like to invite Virginie Paltorp, who represents the statutory auditors, to present her report. And in the interest of the debates, she will not need to read the full reports, if you don't mind. So I'm not going to read all the reports. Ladies and gentlemen, good afternoon. I'm delighted on behalf of the statutory auditors Deloitte and Grant Thornton to tell you about our mission for the fiscal year closed on the 31st of December 2022. And to talk about the various reports. So first, the report for the approval of the consolidated annual accounts for in your first and second resolutions. They are presented on pages 311 and 244 of the URDS available on the internet site of your company. The objective of our work in compliance with our professional standards was to obtain a reasonable assurance that the consolidated accounts of our group, the annual accounts of Worldline, did not contain any inappropriate misstatements. So in all the significant entities of your group, our approach and our diligences were adapted to your group, to its specificities, and to the risks identified based on the quantitative and qualitative criteria. We took the help of the internal control set up by the company, and we covered the current operations as well as the specific operations of this fiscal year. So in 2022, the key points of the audit identified according to their relative weight on the accounts, according to their high degree of assessment and judgment necessary, they were on the consolidated accounts, on the presentation, the disposal of the TSS segment, the evaluation of the goodwill, and the accounting of all the revenues stemming from the transactional activities. And for the annual accounts, it was on the assessment of the securities. So all the work, their advancement and their conclusions were shared with the management, with the audit committee of your group and the board. Based on this work, we certify that the consolidated accounts and the annual accounts of Worldline are true and sincere according to the accounting standards in force, and gives you a faithful image of the financial situation of your group. Our reports also talk about the specific verifications that aim at ensuring the trueness of certain information given in the management report, the report of the board on corporate governance, and the documents addressed to the shareholders. And we have no observation to make on this point. Finally, I'd like to remind you that the company applies according to the legal provisions in force the ISEF format, and we have checked its compliance. Now, in order to implement the European regulations, Worldline has also published the consolidated financial information pro forma, as if it had intervened on the 1st of January 2022 for the P&L of the period. Our report on the pro forma financial information figure on page 241 of the URTS and don't call for any particular comments. Now, as for our special report on the related party agreements on page 215 of the URTS, we have been given no authorized convention during the past year to be submitted to the approval of this General Assembly. And this report recalls the agreements already approved, and the execution was pursued during the past year. And Deloitte issued a report presented in page 226, which concerns the consolidated declaration on non-financial performance, and it confirms the compliance of this declaration according to the law and does not see any material misstatements related to all the information supplied. Within the framework of the Assembly meeting here on an extraordinary basis, we have issued 11 reports referring to resolutions 20 to 31 on the proposals of the board to carry out several capital transactions for the company. These different reports don't call for any particular comment from us. I've finished as for the summary of our report. Thank you for your attention. Thank you, Madam. Thank you, Virginie. And now we're going to go on to the Q&A session. I'd like to say that the answers to the written questions that were put and were received are available on the internet site of the company. If you have any questions, I suggest you raise your hand and a hostess will give you a microphone. In the meantime, our secretary will also receive questions from the teams in charge of managing the platform, and we will see how to include them as much as possible according to the questions raised in the room here. So we're all at your disposal to answer your questions.
Oui, oui, monsieur.
Le micro va arriver, monsieur.
Please wait for the microphone.
Mademoiselle.
Mais ici. Bonjour, monsieur.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for your explanations. I'd like to address myself to Mr. Grapinet. You were very clear in your explanation on the operational conduct, strategic conduct, refocusing on the core business, focusing on the reactor, as you said, and all the explanations given to the questions put by an individual shareholder. You're very clear about Ingenico. And I noted that you were concerned by reassuring the financial community regarding your business sector. And your presentations are interesting for the individual shareholders, and you do provide answers. And Mr. Grapinet, I've been following you since the Crédit Agricole Atos in 2009, at a time when Crédit Agricole was in dire straits. And a little later, Atos was at the top. And we can thank you for having outsourced Worldline, because this allowed us to make up for the losses. Now, let's go back to my questions. I noted with great interest the partnership with Crédit Agricole. I seem to have understood that this work plan, you had also developed it outside of France, and I was wondering whether it was reproducible in other financial institutions in France. And I also wanted to know what you thought about individual shareholders, because I observed when I arrived here that there were more documents for the Anglo-Saxon press than for the French. Thank you very much. Thank you for your comments. I'm happy if during this meeting I can contribute and allow individual shareholders to better understand the sector, better understand our strategy, and better appreciate as a shareholder the outlooks of a company such as ours that is transforming itself very quickly. And we didn't talk about Eurodigital, about evolutions in the means of payment in stores. So thank you for your last comment. Thank you for letting me know. And at the next General Assembly meeting, I'll make sure that the French documentation is as thick as the documents we give to the Anglo-Saxon shareholders. As for the development outlooks of this partnership with the Crédit Agricole, I will answer in two parts. First, this partnership is only on our services to merchants and not on other activity lines for the group, and it only applies to the French market. And I'm not going to speculate on whether with the Crédit Agricole we could do more outside of France, because Crédit Agricole also has activities. You know the group well. It has retail banking abroad. So we've talked about this in our discussions, but we felt that the core was in France, also for the Crédit Agricole, and that we had to start moving in France. But we haven't excluded anything when it would have meaning for them and for us outside of France. And the possibilities of replicating such a partnership in France or welcoming new partners, well, here again, we have an exclusive relationship with Crédit Agricole. This is the agreement from both the parties in this business. But now this industry in the past and currently has demonstrated that it is used to working in some more open configurations. Now, a recent example in Italy, we have a co-company in Italy with the acquisition of Accepta in Italy. In 2022, we acquired another partner, another business portfolio corresponding to the same activities with BNL in Italy. And together with BNL, We are now three partners working in Italy. Worldline, its partner Accepta in Italy, the first one with which we had this agreement, and Codesia, which is a new Italian bank that has joined us to extend the scope. So technological, industrial partnerships, even on the French market, are not excluded in our partnership with Crédit Agricole. We're going to work together on this, and if there's a meaning for ourselves and for Crédit Agricole to work on certain parts with other French partners, this idea would definitely be examined. But first, we're going to launch the rocket. We'll be happy to have colleagues. If it takes off well, it will attract some newcomers, I'm sure. Thank you.
Je vois une main.
Louis Motte, évidemment.
Thank you. I'm an individual shareholder too. You talked about the stock price. That's very disappointing. I assume that for you, your own personal wealth too will be shrinking away as well. And the chairman said he had bought some shares. Maybe everybody else should do the same. Maybe that's why you said that. Anyway, this morning, the Figaro newspaper talked about Worldline. And there's something that explains the situation fairly well, but they don't analyze things like you. They say Worldline is a French technological nugget in payment services whose business is by nature cyclical, has to come to terms with ferocious competition from giants like Apple. That's what they say in the Figaro newspaper this morning about Worldline. Could you say a bit about this? I mean, are there ferocious competition, Apple, for Worldline? Thank you, sir. I won't make comments. I have excellent relations with the French press and the international press, too. My only comment would be that some of the time I spend with them is to help them to properly understand this very complicated industry. The payments world is a complicated world. I'm sorry, but that's just the way it is. I mean, you've all been analyzing it and trying to understand it. There are entry tickets and so on to be a player in this industry. So I spend time with journalists, talking it through with them. And I see some people from the communication department over there. They know I take pleasure in meeting the journalists to explain it to them. This ecosystem is very complicated because you've got people issuing means of payment and you've merchants who need to accept. So it's a two-faced, two-faceted market. And then you've got the payment brands that are the ones you're familiar with, like Visa, MasterCard, PayPal, banking cards. Apple Pay also is another one. It's a payment brand that appeared using Apple Terminus and many others that you're familiar with, the names you know. Chèque déjeuner, ticket restaurant, carte cadeau, the Chinese cards, and so on and so forth, all these vouchers and cards. So basically what I'm saying is that, you know, when you look at the payment sector, you've got to know what you're talking about. Who is doing what in the value chain? We are never competing with the payment brands. Apple and Apple Pay, they're a payment brand. Our job is to enable merchants or banks to be able to accept all of the payment brands that come up on the European market or in the world. The more payment brands arrive on the market, the more the value proposition of a company like ours will be important because we manage that complexity. 20 years ago, in Europe, we had probably no more than about 10 payment brands in each country. Now, there are more than 40 or 50 payment brands that are more or less necessary for certain kinds of merchant activities. So if you're selling online, you'll need PayPal. If you're selling sandwiches, you know, it might be a lunch voucher, ticket restaurant, chèque déjeuner. And, you know, if you're in a Club Med environment or something, you'll have to accept American Express and so on and so forth. So it's the opposite. The more complex the payment ecosystem is, the more the technology value of Worldline will kick in. Because the merchants will be working online or out on the ground, and we are there to help them. Now, our role is to be this kind of central core architect, connecting up everybody, and in the end, making sure the merchant is paid and that the client is debited for the amount he wanted to spend. I don't identify with what the article said. No. And let me avail the opportunity to say that the payment industry is not a cyclical industry. I understand some investors are fearful, they're afraid of recession and people will consume less, they say. We've had recessions in the past, and I've been entrusted with the management of this company since 2014. I was there in 2013 before it was listed. We've seen ups and downs in European economies, but the fact is the way in which we are making our payments these days is changing sustainably. It's the groundswell trend. It is much stronger than the ups and downs you get even in periods of recession in domestic consumption in Europe. So this is a groundswell trend in payments. And this is what I keep on trying to explain to investors. This is a mega trend. It's here to stay. Our historical experience shows us that even in a recession scenario, in the end of the day, people need to consume after all, don't they? And it's and a lot of the payment streams, it's day-to-day purchases. It's not discretionary purchases only. No, people make their everyday payments as well using our services. I mean, they go to the butcher, they go to buy a baguette, they go to a supermarket, they purchase petrol for their cars and so on. So these are ordinary day-to-day expenses that won't go away if there's a crisis or a recession. Now, I prefer growth in the booming economy than a recession myself, but I wouldn't say a recession would have no impact. But recession, we've had recessions in the past. Usually our revenues were just marginally impacted in times of recession. So we're not a cyclical business activity, and competition with Apple, no competition with Apple. Thank you for your question.
Bonjour, messieurs. Merci.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Thank you for your explanations on the company. You've used very robust arguments. My name is André. I'm an individual shareholder. I was wondering about three things. The first, I was a bit naive about it. Your volume, your profitability, as you were explaining, is it a question of transaction volumes? The impact of the amount of each transaction, does it have an effect on your remuneration in the company? The second question, it's an accounting question. You talked about giving up a business which might be marginal in Russia. Have you booked provisions and what is the impact on the results? And the third question, I was wondering also if I remember it. Yes, you're talking about the countries outside of France. You're developing well in France, but as for Germany, we know that Germany, I think that the percentage of car payments in Germany is under 50%. It's around 45%. Whereas in France, roughly, okay, in France it's more than 60%. So aren't you eyeing the German market? And I think that there are some competitors who are quite fierce in Germany. So there are 80 million people in Germany. It's a large country. And I wanted to know if you had any projects to go to Germany or develop in Germany. Thank you. Thank you for your questions. The first one, what was it? Just keep the microphone. What was the first question? Yeah, the impact. Yes, okay, I remember. I'm sorry, but I cannot hear him because he has no mic. But Chigrapina has understood. And the answer is both. Part of our activities, we are processors. We operate transactions for banks. We deliver payment authorizations for the banks who've given you the cards. We operate more than 100 million cards for the banks who distribute them to their clients. And when you enter this card in a terminal or you declare it on the internet, it will go through our systems. And we, for the banks, we will carry out all kinds of verifications that it isn't banned, that it hasn't exceeded the ceiling, that there's no fraud detected by our systems. And then we will deliver a payment authorization that we will see appearing on the payment terminal when you see transaction authorized. It's the result of this whole chain from the side of the bank that has given the card to the client. When you're in this type of activity, you're paid according to the number of transactions. The transaction volume, that is the key to the volume. It can be the number of cards we manage for the portfolio of a bank, the number of unitary transactions, but it is the number of transactions. That's the historical incumbent business of the group, as we said. And as for the services to merchants, we have two types of remuneration, to simplify things. For half of the revenue of our revenue from merchants, we are following digital rationales. When we have a business that is the technical acceptance of payments, I'm stopping here from the technical point of view because I love technology. But when you're not in charge of delivering funds to the merchant on his account and you only do the technique and somebody else will do the funds because he's sold something to his client, well, here again, we're paid on the volumes of activity, the numbers of operation. But for the first business of the group, our incumbent business, when we acquire payment flows and when we pay the money on the banking account of the merchant, we are paid according to the value of the ticket, of the cash ticket of this merchant. And this is ad valorem because we take a responsibility for a few seconds, for a day sometimes. The funds that we've taken from the bank of the payer, we bring it to the bank of the merchant. We are responsible for the proper functioning of this. And in that case, we take a percentage of the value of the transaction. Now, the second question regarding Russia, we've stopped our business in Russia. Henri, to tell you about the legal part of things, we weren't significantly present in Russia with Worldline. What we were doing for the Russian market was to allow the Russian consumers to use the payment infrastructure on the Worldline to buy products and services that they would buy outside of Russia and get them delivered in Russia. And when the international sanctions were pronounced, when the war with Ukraine started, we totally stopped this corridor, as we call it. It's an internet corridor. And we stopped any business vis-a-vis the Russian consumers. What I'm saying here is that directly we, in these internet payment services, we didn't have people on the spot, low premises or servers for our machinery. In the operation, we were talking earlier about the disposal of the terminal activity coming from Ingenico. There was a company that had activities in Russia, and that company had to be preserved by Worldline to secure transactions. And the disposal of the rest of the activities was done in compliance with regulations. These activities were disposed of according to regulations, and all the assets were depreciated. So everything was booked, all the provisions were booked, and the assets are at zero in our account. So there's no additional exposure from this point of view. And third point, you are right. Germany is a huge market. Germany is a paradox, the largest European economy where there are a lot of cash payments. It's cultural. It's the only country where when you go to an ATM, until not so long ago, you had banknotes of 200 euros. They even have banknotes of 500 euros. In France, when I take a 100-note bill, I don't find them anywhere, but if you give it to a merchant, he'll call the police. So the fact is that the more cash there is on the market, the more interesting the market, because that means structural growth with all the transactions in this country, a lot of cash towards digital payment. And Germany and COVID has really accelerated this movement, because in Germany also we had the same reflexes to avoid touching things that had been touched by others. And the country moved forward thanks to that. And the good answer to your question. You've answered the strategic point of this market. We have more than projects. We're number one in Germany for services to the merchants. We hold 40% of the market. And as Bernard was saying earlier on, and our board has reflected that, the presence of Michael Storlartz at the board, that's the symbol of the strong partnership we have with Germany, with the first German banking group, which are the German savings banks. And we have a Pay One, that is our vector in Germany, which is a wonderful vector. And of course, the Crédit Agricole has looked at what we're doing in Germany with the Caisse d'Epargne in Germany. They are convinced that Worldline is a good partner to do the same thing in France. But Germany really has a huge potential, and it's really contributed to our results in the past few years.
We have a question that's come in. Charles-Henri will read it out. To pay back profits to shareholders, what's your policy in terms of dividend payout and share buybacks? Mr. Grappinet, well, the members of the board are here with me, and our chairman, the members of the board, will correct me if I say anything wrong. But in the long term, Worldline's aim, as we've written in our documentation at the time of the IPO, Worldline intends to pay out a dividend to our shareholders. You've seen we're in a business line that's profitable, that's posting growth, and the OMDA conversion into free cash flow is very promising, very sound basis indeed to regularly pay out a dividend. However, we may consider this will obtain unless we consider that business development should be given priority. We should use our cash to plow it back into acquisitions, perhaps, so as to increase value creation for shareholders, so as to build up positions like we've been building up for the last few years. So up to now, this question is always revisited every year at the board, of course. It's been considered that given the acquisition prospects that we have ahead of us, we have in our pipeline, the list of the targets we're working on, well, it seemed to be in the best interest of the company to devote as much of our cash as possible to those acquisitions, such that up to now we didn't pay out dividends, and it's remained the policy proposed to this AGM by your board for the results from 2022 as well. Obviously, in the longer term, I'm totally convinced that we will consider someday that in terms of acquisitions, we've actually built up the company that we wanted to build up 8 years ago now, and that we will then enter into a new phase in terms of restoring value to shareholders, in terms of shareholder returns. And up to now, the board and the management have recommended that we'll create more value by developing the group than by paying out dividends. But it's not outside of our radar screen at all. Same thing for share buybacks. You can imagine they're another way of using the cash of the company to, of course, to restore value, to return value to shareholders. The chairman may like to add something. Yeah. Well, there's another question over there, says the chairman. Towards the front. Yes, thank you. Good afternoon, everybody. Well, several questions. You did the disposal of the payment terminals that came from Ingenico originally, and I think there were some, you mentioned this last year, there were some that were, there was a part that was fixed, that was paid, and then another part that depended on the future performance, if I remember correctly, of that TSS division. And I'm just wondering, what's the amount? Have you visibility now about the amount you're going to get back in that variable portion that was supposed to be paid to you in respect of performance criteria? And the other question I have is, we've been talking about the promising partnership with Crédit Agricole, and I was just wondering if you have any idea, I mean, can you quantify what it might represent in the coming few years for Worldline? Third question I have is that there is a big difference in growth and in weight among the three divisions. The different business lines are not the same size. And there's a kind of preponderant weight of one. Are you going to marginalize the other two divisions then compared to the big one? And what's the advantage of the other two divisions then, of keeping them on board? Or what's going to happen there? Would they be growing to grow as big as the biggest division? That's my question. And another question that comes to mind is you have this business activity in Australia quite a lot. You said last year that the behavior was fairly comparable between the Australian market and the European market. And could you tell us a bit more about the Australian part of the business? And do you think there will be interesting growth to be tapped into there by Worldline? And my last question is you were appointed board member of Orange, the Orange company, recently. And between Worldline and Orange, is there something, or would there be promising things to be done in the future, or interesting things at least? Well, that's quite a lot. Thank you for all these interesting questions. Maybe Gregory Lamberti could answer you on the terminals. Marc-Henri will be happy to talk about Australia, I'm sure. And he was there not so long ago. And I'll answer your other questions myself. So, Mr. Lamberti, regarding the disposal of the terminals, Worldline, it was associated in the success of that transaction conducted by Apollo via preference shares held by Worldline that aligned the interests of Apollo and Worldline. And the performance of those shares will enable us to receive up to 900 million euro if the transaction of the buyback by Apollo is successful. What we said at the time of the signature was that if the business plan, the vendor's business plan that we prepared at the time of the transaction were achieved, we would receive the 900 million euro. And if even if the performance were lesser by about 20% in terms of the OMDA, we'd still get the 100% of the 900 million euro mentioned, even with a performance level of less 20%. Now, the valuation of the stock price at the moment, 630 million's worth in Worldline accounts, and that's the that reflects our hopes of achieving value ultimately. Regarding Crédit Agricole, says Mr. Grappini.
So there's going to be a development, a ramping up. It's mechanical with the structuring of our agreements and with the contribution of the assets of both. So there's going to be a contribution from assets from both the companies. And there is no cash payment, so that will really protect our balance sheet. And this will develop gradually from 2025 onwards. And what we said is that we hope that by the end of the decade, it will be at least 200 million of euros of revenue of services to the merchants that will be consolidated in Worldline accounts, which is huge. Today, the merchant services division represents 3 million euros. It's going to grow until then. But, of course, we want to beat our own ambitions when we have joint companies. And as for Australia, well, Australia is fully part of Worldline activities because it's joint venture. The way we set it up, the ANZ Bank brought its portfolio of merchants in the joint venture that we're consolidating. So we are operating this portfolio since April 2021 on the bank systems. And April 2022, sorry, I'm correcting myself, says the speaker, April 2022. And now we've carried out migration onto our systems, but in terms of economic effects, they are already included in Worldline accounts. So we have the revenue generated. We're talking about MSV, 70 billions of MSV in Australia, so that's a large volume, and will be close to 200 millions of euros of revenue. So it's an important activity, and it is a market that is quite dynamic. Australia is quite buoyant after COVID with the return of the general economic activity. And in a way, they're opening to international trade and to international travelers, especially the Indian and the Chinese who go to study in Australia. So we have very interesting momentum, and it will develop as our products will allow us to differentiate ourselves on the Australian market. Thank you, Marc-Henri. You asked another question, which is related to the strong transformation of the group, which I recalled at the beginning, because our three divisions went through some important developments. After the IPO, the Merchant Services Division has seen its revenue multiplied by 7-8, processes by 2.5. We don't do any acquisitions in the third division because there are hardly any assets corresponding to the activities of that division. So it only has its organic growth. But your question is very interesting. And of course, we are examining the transformation of the group's profile and part of our activity. And that's our responsibility as the management team to strengthen the synergies between these two components of the group. And to answer your question, the FS division, industrial processing, 900 million of revenue, that is the armed arm that supports the MS division. That is the internal processor of our divisions. It's an important synergy because its growth on the European market will allow us to have scale growth. And in our merchant division, we'll have the size effect that processing benefits from because one supplies the other. So that's our core project. And there are certain market evolutions. I don't want to be too technical. Both manufacture products in a together that will be built and industrialized by the industrial processors and sold by services to merchants because it can be interesting to banks and merchants. So there are synergies. METS follows the same trajectory. It's trying to enrich and be closer to the other members of the group because there's a point of vigilance for all of us and the board that is if we continue along these lines, this size difference will lead us to review the group's organization sooner or later to see how to better organize these synergies eventually. But until now, since the group has been growing and in development, we've been very happy to see these commercial synergies working better and better. Our third division, METS, has very powerful products. They're of great interest to banks, and it benefits from the commercial coverage from industrial processing with the 300 banks with which we work. And this division is selling its products to major European banks thanks to the commercial footprint of the second division of the group. So we want to optimize this type of commercial synergies, and we're working on this on a daily basis. And the last word on Orange. Thank you for having noticed this. When I was director at Orange, for my proper governance, I don't mix things up. And today, it's interesting for Worldline. Orange is a high-tech company at the core of digital transformation, and it's transforming our ways of communicating, and that's interesting for Worldline. We're interested in what this 5G will look like, 6G, the development of the infrastructure, understand what's happening in our country. It helps us think about the future of Worldline, because what we've learned for decades is that as soon as you have a new means of communication that appears in our lives, somebody uses it to do business, and then we'll have to pay or be paid for that. And there is a direct link between communication technology and evolution in the world of payments. And as a director, my sales teams will continue their lives with Orange. They'll keep working with Orange, and I trust them fully.
There's another question that came in on the platform. Says Charles-Henri, what measures are you taking for employees concerning purchasing power given the inflationary trend and the energy crisis? Thank you, says Intergrabinet. Well, like all groups, we've been very sensitive to the need to change our pay policy very quickly. This is a change in paradigm that lots of companies, all companies have had to deal with. And so in 2022, we did pay increases of, on average, more than 5% group-wide, differentiated from one country to another, and also the policies implemented in each country by the managerial staff and the human resources people were many and varied depending on the country. But we've tried to take care of the inflationary trends in that way, and we've tried to up lower wage brackets and specific policies to help people and boost their purchasing power in certain countries, depending on fiscal arrangements and so on. And in 2023, the context around us is still inflationary. And the policy we've budgeted is to lead to pay increases to and make sure that our remuneration will remain in the market, competitive and on a par with what other companies are doing in those markets. And we're going to continue rolling out that policy to make sure that our compensation policy won't diverge from the average we see in the geographies we're present in most of the geographies we work in. Thank you, says the chairman. I think at this point we will thank you for your questions. And now we'll move on to vote upon the resolutions. And Charles-Henri de Taffin is the person who will coordinate the process. Just to say that some documents were requested by a gentleman down here towards the front. I think our team has given you the documents you asked for. Isn't that correct? Thank you. The person is speaking without a microphone. The interpreter can't hear him. Okay. So, Mr. Taffin, for the resolutions for the ordinary part of the meeting will be adopted on the basis of a straight majority of those voting parties who are present and represented, and the extraordinary part of the meeting, those resolutions will be voted upon using a qualified majority of two-thirds. I suggest we'll read out only a summary of each resolution before voting upon each resolution in turn. The definitive quorum is 281,470,929 shares present or represented. That represents 80.2% of the registered capital with voting rights. The practical implementing arrangements of the functioning of the tablet you'll use for voting, I think you've already received when you arrived, so you know how the tablets work to cast your votes. And we will move on to the resolutions. The first resolution will come first, but before that, we'll give you the instructions about how to use your voting tablets. To vote upon the resolutions of the general meeting, a tablet was handed over to you. It is strictly personal and will be used only during this meeting. When we announce that we will vote upon a resolution, the voting window will be displayed automatically on your tablet, even though it may be on standby. It's very simple. To vote, just press on the button that corresponds to your choice, for, abstention, or against. Press the OK button to validate your choice before we close the poll. Once you have validated your vote, you cannot modify it any further. Thank you in advance for handing back your tablet when you leave the room. So firstly, says Mr. Taffin, under the ordinary part of the session, we have resolution number one, approval of the statutory financial statements for the financial year ended on 31st of December 2022. The poll is open now. The poll is now over. This resolution stands approved more than 99.9% in favour. Second resolution, approval of the consolidated financial statements for the financial year ended on December 31st, 2022. We open the poll now. The poll is now over. The resolution stands approved. 99.96% of votes in favor. Resolution number three, allocation of the net income for the financial year ended on December 31st, 2022. The poll is now open. The poll is now over. This resolution is approved 99.99% of votes in favor. Resolution number 4, approval of the special report of the statutory auditors regarding the agreements and undertakings referred to in Articles L225-38 and the following ones of the French Code de Commerce. We open the poll. The poll is now over. This resolution is approved. More than 99.99% of votes in favor. Resolution number 5, renewal of the term of office of Bernard Bourigeaud as director. We open the poll. The poll is now over. This resolution stands approved, 97.18% of votes in favor. Thank you. Resolution number 6, renewal of Gilles Grapinet as director. The poll is open now. The poll is now over. This resolution stands approved, 99.83% of votes in favor. Thank you. Resolution number 7, renewal of Gilles Arditi as director. The poll is open. The poll is now over. This resolution is approved, 98.89% of votes in favor. Resolution number 8, renewal of Aldo Cardoso as director. The poll is open now. The poll is now closed. This resolution is approved, 93.81% of votes in favor. Thank you. Ninth resolution, renewal of Julia Fitzpatrick as director. The poll is open. The poll is now closed. This resolution stands approved, 95.26% of votes in favor. Thank you. 10th resolution, renewal of Thierry Sommelet. Renewal of Thierry Sommelet as director. Please vote now. The poll is over. This resolution is approved, 96.15% of votes in favor. 11th resolution, approval of the information referred to in paragraph I of Article L22-10-9 of the French Code de Commerce related to the compensation paid during the financial year ended on December 31st, 2022, or awarded for the same financial year to all company officers. We open the poll. The poll is over. This resolution is approved, 93.22% of votes in favor. 12th resolution,
approval of the components making up the total compensation and benefits of any kind paid during the financial year ended on December 31st, 2022, or awarded for the same financial year to Bernard Bourigeaud, Chairman of the Board of Directors. Please vote now. The poll is closed. Ninety-9.83% of votes in favor, so this resolution is approved. 13th resolution, approval of the components making up the total compensation and benefits of any kind paid during the financial year ended on December 31st, 2022, or awarded for the same financial year to Gilles Grapinet, Chief Executive Officer. The poll is now open. The poll is now closed. This resolution is approved. 89.79% of votes in favor. 89.79% of votes in favor. 14th resolution. Approval of the components making up the total compensation and benefits of any kind paid during the financial year ended on December 31st, 2022, or awarded for the same financial year to Marc-Henri Desportes, Deputy Chief Executive. The poll is now open. The poll is closed. This resolution is approved. 90.12% of votes in favor. 15th resolution, approval of the compensation policy applicable to the chairman of the board of directors for the 2023 financial year. The poll is open. The poll is closed. This resolution is approved. 99.83% of votes in favor. 16th resolution, approval of the compensation policy applicable to the Chief Executive Officer for the 2023 financial year. The poll is open. The poll is now closed. This resolution is approved. 91.8% of votes in favor. 17th resolution, approval of the compensation policy applicable to the Deputy Chief Executive Officer for the 2023 financial year. The poll is open. The poll is now closed. This resolution stands approved. 91.75% of votes in favor. 18th resolution, approval of the compensation policy applicable to non-executive directors for the 2023 financial year. The poll is now open. The poll is now closed. This resolution is approved. 99.79% of votes in favor. 19th resolution, authorization to the Board of Directors for the purpose of purchasing, holding, or transferring shares of the company. The poll is now open. The poll is now closed. This resolution is approved. 96.58% of votes in favor. We'll now move on to the resolutions within the context of the extraordinary meeting. Authorization granted to the Board of Directors to reduce the share capital through the cancellation of Treasury shares. This is resolution number 20. We open the poll. The poll is now closed. 94.89% of votes in favour. This resolution is carried. Resolution number 21, delegation to the Board of Directors of authority to decide the issue of shares and or securities giving access to share capital and or securities carrying a right to the allocation of debt instruments while maintaining a preferential subscription rights. We open the poll. The poll is now closed. This resolution is carried. 97.38% of votes in favour. Number 22, delegation to the Board of Directors of authority to decide the issue of shares and or securities giving access to share capital and or securities carrying a right to the allocation of debt instruments through public offerings without preferential subscription rights with a priority subscription right for shareholders. The poll is now open. The poll is now closed. This resolution is carried. 93.08% of votes in favour. The 23rd resolution is next, delegation to the Board of Directors of authority to decide the issue of shares and or securities giving access to share capital and or securities carrying a right to the allocation of debt securities through public offerings referred to in Article L4112.1 of the French Code Monetaire et Financier without preferential subscription rights. The poll is now open. The poll is now closed. This resolution is carried. 90.72% of votes in favour. Thank you. Number 24. Delegation to the Board of Directors of authority to increase the number of securities to be issued in connection with the share capital increase with or without preferential subscription rights. The poll is now open. Le vote est clos. The poll is closed. This resolution is carried 83.09% of votes in favour. Number 25, delegation to the Board of Directors of authority to issue shares or securities giving access to the share capital as consideration for contributions in kind relating to equity securities or securities giving access to the share capital other than the case of a public exchange offer. The poll is open. The poll is closed. This resolution is carried. 97.51% of votes in favour. Thank you. Resolution number 26, delegation to the Board of Directors of authority to decide to increase the company's share capital by incorporating premiums, reserve profits, or other items. The poll is open. Thank you. The poll is now closed. This resolution is carried 99.9% of votes in favor. Resolution number 27, delegation to the Board of Directors of Authority to decide the issue of shares without preferential subscription rights reserved for beneficiaries of free shares granted by Worldline IGSA, formerly Ingenico Group SA, and holders of Worldline IGSA shares through a company savings plan and or a group savings plan or through a company mutual fund. The poll is open. The poll is now completed. This resolution is adopted. 96.82% of votes in favor. Number 28, delegation to the Board of Directors of Authority to increase the share capital of the company without preferential subscription rights for the benefit of employees and or corporate officers of the company and its affiliated companies as members of a company or group savings plan. The poll is now open. Le vote est clos. The poll is closed. This resolution is carried 98.69% of votes in favor. Resolution number 29. Delegation to the Board of Directors of Authority to increase the company's share capital without preferential subscription rights reserved for people with certain characteristics in the context of an employee shareholding operation. The poll is now open. The poll is closed. This resolution is approved. 98.69% of votes in favor. Resolution number 30, authorization to the Board of Directors to grant options to subscribe for or to purchase shares to the employees and or corporate officers of the company and or its affiliated companies. The poll is now open. The poll is closed. This resolution is approved. 88.04% of votes in favor. Resolution number 31, authorization to the Board of Directors to grant free performance shares to the employees and corporate officers of the company and or its affiliated companies. The poll is now open. The poll is now closed. This resolution is carried 93.58% of votes in favor. Resolution number 32, amendment of Article 19 of the company's bylaws to change the age limit for the chairman of the Board of Directors. The poll is now open. The poll is closed. This resolution is carried 94.09% of votes in favor. And resolution number 33, the last one on powers. The poll is open now. The poll is now closed. This resolution is carried more than 99.99% of votes in favor. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for taking part in this meeting. I'd like to recall that you should please hand back your tablets to the hostesses as you leave the room, and I'll give the floor back to the chairman to close the meeting.
Ladies and gentlemen, dear shareholders, I'd like to thank you for your participation. I'd like to take this opportunity to thank the members of the board and the entire managerial team of the company, and tell you that it was a pleasure to hold this AG physically, because it's an important moment of exchange in the life of the company. Thank you for your support, and hope to see you soon.